Learning is one of the foundations of humanity. We can cram a lot of stuff into these big brains and make the world a better place with the information, but we don't all learn at the same rate or in the same ways. Our next guest has been working with people with learning disabilities, and she proposes a different term, unique learners. Suzanne Cresswell is a physical and occupational therapist in Reading. She has taken a look at the ways in which people learn and how the people who teach them can learn those ways. Suzanne wrote a book published last year called Unique Learner Solutions, and she's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Suzanne Cresswell, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Thanks, Jeffrey.
How did you arrive at the term unique learners? It seems preferable to you to learning disabilities.
Correct. Well, yeah, it's a term I've used for years and years, really. The students in our classrooms these days are coming at their work from a variety of different approaches, and not all of them learn in the typical fashion that sometimes the general education model is set up for. And these children are very intelligent young people and go on to great leadership positions and so forth, and yet they take information in a different way, and that's really what learning is about, is taking that information in. And so there's a variety of ways that we can look at these students and children of ours. They provide us with evidence as to how their brains are functioning, and the teachers are working with these individuals in all kinds of creative ways and having tremendous success, primarily by introducing movement into the classroom.
Movement. This sort of comes into your realm of physical and occupational therapy then, doesn't it?
Yes, it certainly does. We in occupational therapy, I'm a physical therapist as well. I have a clinic in Reading, and I see children in the school systems as an occupational therapist. But I have both degrees, yes, very strongly in physical therapy and in occupational therapy. We believe that movement is necessary and good and helps the entire human system function, including the brain.
Which is sort of a bit of a rub up against the way that we do things in school, where we expect kids to sit in their desks. This is not necessarily the best way, it sounds like, for some kids.
Well, very early on, we are asking a lot of the children. Sometimes it's beyond what they are neurodevelopmentally prepared to do. Children in preschool and kindergarten, for example, are performing a lot of their activities in a seated position. They're receiving the instructions in a seated position, and the instructions as to what they're going to do next are sometimes 7 and 8 steps, and children at this age really are not able to memorize 7 or 8. Actually, adults generally were thought to be able to memorize 7 bits of information prior to needing to use some technology like a pencil and pen to write something down. So the children are being asked to do a lot that is in some ways beyond their developmental ability, and many, many children respond well to this and function very well, but there are a few that just don't fit in with this model, and unfortunately we may be a little quick to judge them as misbehaving.
Now, sections in the book do address ADHD, attention deficit with hyperactivity disorder, and autism and other challenges to learning that are diagnosable, but can you still be a unique learner and not necessarily have a diagnosable condition?
Sure. There, children on the playground, for instance, it's interesting to watch how they interact with their peers. The nuances of the recess and lunchtime games are very complex, and the rules change rather quickly. And to be able to see these students on the playground being able to interact with their peers, either initiating the fun game or being able to follow in sequence and being a member of the team and following this fun game, let's consider the fun game tetherball, for example, and to be able to manage the timing and the rhythm of interacting with the tetherball successfully, standing in line as you're supposed to, avoiding being hit by the tetherball, all of these kinds of things that are happening in their movement system relates directly to their ability then to go back to their desks and sit and interact with materials on a two-dimensional level, reading, writing, and arithmetic, and so forth. And so sometimes you can see these students, they're not, like you were describing, they're not necessarily special education, not necessarily autism and so forth, but children will struggle when they have difficulty operating their body in space, for example, on the recess playground during physical education or playing other sports, if they have some difficulty with their coordination at that level, very often it will influence their ability to understand the spatial relation. If, for example, like a lowercase letter B, D, and a P,
oh, sure.
If you think of it, it's a vertical line and it's got a semicircle attached to one or the other side or the top of the line or the bottom of the line. It's a very difficult spatial arrangement to decode unless you are comfortable with yourself in terms of top, bottom, left, right, and orienting yourself. You've got to be able to manage on the tetherball court, if you will, you know, that spatial planning rhythm in the real, in the three-dimensional world, to then be able to decipher that to be successful for printing letters, numerals, and decoding for reading. For example, the student with dyslexia, where there's a chapter on that as well. And these two systems integrate very closely, the movement system and the ability then to use the cortex for what I consider the teacher's domain. It's almost like the brain is like a mushroom, if you will, and the top of the mushroom is the aspect that the teachers have in terms of the reading, the writing, and the arithmetic. But the stem of the mushroom, the brain stem, really, of the cortex of the brain stem is essential for setting up the brain so it's ready to take information in and discern these different spatial relationships, but also be able to discern the nuances of the English language, to be able to hear discriminatively so they can look, listen, read, and write absolutely depends on their movement system, on their brainstem operation. The ability of the mushroom cap to be successful in handing in homework and getting grades is entirely related to the mushroom stem. And it doesn't change at all during our lives, but it's becomes much more evident in the children because we can actually see how development impacts them. In adults, we've become a little bit more sophisticated at identifying where our strengths and weaknesses are, and then we can pull away or be reticent in some way to participate in those things we're less successful at. It's a coping strategy. You know, I may not choose to become a painter because I don't have that, sense of color and discernment and so forth, and that's a handicap for me, and yet it doesn't keep me from my life. I found my strengths and moved around it. So as a child, though, it's much more evident, and we can really see what's going on in the brain. So anyways, as an adult, we need movement ourselves. This is why we love the gym. This is why we take walks at lunchtime. This is why we do yoga. We're interacting our physical vessel with the gravitational pull of the Earth's surface, and we find that to be a calming sensation on the brain. And after the walk, the yoga, the gym, you find you have a sense of clarity, that decisions that maybe were pressing on you prior to going to the gym evaporate, it becomes much more clear, the salient details to make a decision. So these are things that the human body requires through its entire life, and yet in the children, it is much more evident when that is or isn't in place.
Suzanne Cresswell is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an occupational therapist and a physical therapist based in Reading. Her website, uniquelearnersolutions.com. Her book is Unique Learner Solutions, Discovering the Ability in Learning Disability. You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So is it a fairly direct link if a child is somewhat clumsy, lack some gross motor skills, they might have some difficulty taking in information as well?
It means lean in and look a little more deeply. It's a red flag. When, as a parent, when you've exhausted the try harder strategy, the do it again, try harder in terms of their homework or rewriting the paper or completing the math assignment, or when try harder and try again is no longer successful, then you may have a unique learner on your hands. An individual that has difficulty operating through three-dimensional space, to use the common word, is somewhat clumsy, very likely will have some difficulty interpreting that same space in the two-dimensional world ultimately, which is what they're doing at their desks. Letters and numerals have two dimensions. They have height and width, whereas, if you will, the three the real world, you know, as height, width, and depth. So this is why childhood play is so essential early in their lives. What they're really figuring out is how to go up and down stairs and what has to happen to the body and how to open and close doors and in, out, left, right, above, below. These are all spatial relationships in the three-dimensional world that need to have internalized, inherent, intuitive, if you will, meaning to the individual so that they can move it to the part of their brain where it is kind of like a no-brainer, if you will. And then when they're at their desks and being taught numerals and letters and adding and subtracting, taking away from, and so forth, these directly, they have some experience with this, with their bodies in three-dimensional space, so that they can then take this and use this symbolic language. That's really what math is describing our three-dimensional space in a way that we can measure and speak to one another and advance our society as a result. But you have to understand three-dimensional space internally. Mm-hmm. Not all kids do. Some kids really have to work at. You'll see that they're sitting laterally in their seat. You see them in the cafeteria with their feet on either side of the bench, addressing their lunch, you know, sideways. They're using their space in a different fashion. And so not all children really are able to interpret space in a simple way. And if they are not able to do that, you can be sure they're having to focus on that, unlike the child sitting next to them. They're having to focus on that in a much more in-depth fashion. It wouldn't be unlike if you were to rent a car that was unfamiliar to you, mm-hmm. maybe standard transmission, the car seat, the steering wheel, setting that all up, and you rented the car just as you're moving in, driving into a new city you haven't driven before. I'm just going to pick L.A.
Right.
Since there's a lot of traffic. You, too, would find you would bring other sensations down. You'd turn the radio off. You don't need that sensation coming into your ears. The person next to you is maybe trying to show you on the phone where the map is. That visual information is not helpful at this point in time. You are maybe changing your posture, you know, to secure and hold on to the steering wheel and use the correct posture as you're driving and whether or not you've adjusted this rental car properly for your posture. It's much more effort than when you look at the person driving the car beside you who's so familiar with those movement patterns, that traffic and so forth. They're much more relaxed than yourself. That's what it's like for these children in the school system.
Right, so the physical surroundings have to relax before the brains can relax and take in some information.
Yes. So these children are working very hard. They're in general education, and we're not always aware of how much effort they're applying. And so by the end of the class, they're actually fatigued. And then that manifests in a variety of ways.
Sure, so when they're tired, they're not taking stuff
in. These children, whether they fling an eraser or refuse to continue to perform the work, that manifests in a variety of ways, that fatigue. And so then it is a self-fulfilling prophecy. It does look like the child is exhibiting some negative behaviors. And in fact, it's actually neurophysiologically based that this is, the child is fatigued at this point in time and has run out of strategies.
Suzanne Cresswell, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a physical and occupational therapist in Reading. We're talking about her approach to people who learn differently. She chooses to use the term unique learner solutions, so unique learners for the people who have some learning disabilities. But her book is called Unique Learner Solutions, website by the same name, uniquelearnersolutions.com. You can join our discussion here on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Karen in Humboldt County. Welcome.
Hi. I'm not sure where she's gotten her information. It sounds like she's gotten it from a lot of different sources. I would take issue with almost everything she just said, although I realize she isn't using scientific method to actually analyze the information she's taken in. My IQ is in the higher range, and most of my friends are in the same position, and we're all a bunch of klutzes. And we've all been klutzes since we were kids, young kids, all had to try harder to do all kinds of stuff and many things we couldn't do, like tennis and other mm-hmm. certain things like that, and fallen a whole bunch of times. And I was even diagnosed as a teenager as having my motor coordination was on the low side of normal. And, you know, everything she's saying is basically ridiculous. So I don't know. I don't understand. I think, you know, in her profession, I guess maybe whatever works, but it isn't anywhere in the realm of reality. Most of the people I knew as in school and most of my friends, even out of school, were really high performers.
So I was going to ask you about that. So you mentioned high IQ, but were you good at school as well?
Totally good. I mean, I didn't even ever have to study outside of class until I went back to college as an older adult.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then I would get, if I studied outside of class, I'd get A's and B's rather than B's and C's.
All right. Thanks. Okay? Thanks, Kim.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
Right. Thank you. So, Suzanne, what do you say about people who can be klutzes and still be high academic achievers at the same time?
Yeah, she's so right to bust me for that. And it's difficult on a radio show to be general. I want to support your initial question regarding, you know, is there sometimes a direct link? And I do want to encourage parents and teachers to look a little bit more closely on those children who have difficulty navigating in the three-dimensional world, and then to use your caller's term klutzy and the common term clumsy and so forth. But she's completely right to negate a portion of what I'm talking about. There is certainly a large population of individuals who are leaders in our thinking, and they're very able to utilize their cognitive system extremely well, and may or may not shine when it comes to the soccer field and all of these kinds of things. And that is entirely the case. Let's move then. Really, what I want to talk about is the individuals who have sensory challenges. They have difficulty interpreting how their body is operating in space. It's hard for them to feel how gravity operates on the body, and these are one of the very initial things that happen when we are first born, when we move from the buoyant environment to the gravitational pull of the Earth's surface. One of the very first things that is stimulated is our ability to feel and detect gravity. And the brain has to process that.
That's the vestibular system?
I'm sorry?
Is that the vestibular system you're talking about?
That's the vestibular system. Yes, that's the vestibular system. And that has to be processed in the brain in those first few moments of life so that the infant then can respond to gravity, lift their head without suffocating ultimately, and moving toward a source of food. And then that connects a whole series of other sensations. In the end, the auditory sensation becomes connected with the mother's voice, the tactile system once the child is emotionally comforted, and the nurturant, the source of food and so forth. All of these things trigger together and start that whole neurodevelopmental system. So so that when we have a child who has some learning challenges, we, as an occupational therapist and a physical therapist, we will look to back up and see what is happening on that level. If their balance is off, if there's a sense of clumsiness, it's a first place that we'll begin to explore, because everything depends in terms of dominoes falling to place for cognition. Everything depends on that individual being able to integrate their vestibular system.
And so things have to happen in a certain order as we develop. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. So if you have someone who is having difficulty feeling gravity as witnessed by bumping into the door frame, tripping over the pet dog, these kinds of things, then they're also to be able to... The visual system, for example, requires the entire body to be in good balance so the eyes can work individually, the head is still, so the eyes can then focus in, for example, and see the center of a flower, the stamen, and this and that, but also for the eyes to focus in and see the horizontal lines of the page, distinguish that from the vertical lines of the letters, and that all depends on your sense of balance and gravity. So we will look, as I said, at children at recess and playground, and when they come into the clinic here, we put them through some gross motor evaluations and then start to learn about their sensory processing system, and then be able to tell the parents and teachers ways of augmenting their ability to learn, which is usually then in addition to the reading and writing and like listening and learning type of, would be also allowing that child to use their tactile system, which was also awakened very early in that developmental process, their vestibular system, and allowing their muscles and joints to move. And
let me see if I can get a call in here. Let's go to Harold in Eugene. Welcome to The Exchange.
Hello, yeah. I actually can identify with a lot of the things that she's referring to. One of the consequences of a lot of these issues is that I'm not able to multitask like a lot of other people can. And so one consequence of my inability to multitask is that I'm not able to learn how to drive a motor vehicle, which is why I don't have a license. Another thing that was a result of that, or a consequence, is that during my time in school, when the teacher was lecturing, all students had to take notes during the lecture. I found that, in my case, the teacher was lecturing on the topic faster than I could write his lectures down on the paper that I had to write the lecture notes on. Mm-hmm. And so by the time I got finished, I had all these almost all but indecipherable scribbles. And we had to hand our work in to the teacher to evaluate to make sure that the teacher knew that we had learned and memorized what he had taught during the lecture. And since my handwriting was almost indecipherable, they were constantly advising me to use a typewriter, except that my lack of ability to multitask. And
all right, so Harold, hang on a second, because I appreciate the story. I just have very little time left, and I do want to ask Suzanne. So are teachers over time getting better at recognizing what it is that it takes to get individual students to learn?
Yes. The modern teacher model, the teachers are coming in really understanding how it's necessary to augment the listening and the looking with movement, and movement that relates to the student and relates to what it is they're looking at and listening, and it's a beautiful connection.
Okay, the brain and body together as we learn in Unique Learner Solutions. Also at uniquelearnersolutions.com, Suzanne Cresswell is a physical and occupational therapist in Reading. Thank you.